This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Mark Haney. It's the time of year when many people start thinking about turning over the dirt in the garden and getting ready for winter. But you might be able to keep plants growing outside and even bring some inside. Joining me for our regular gardening show today are Campbell County Extension Office horticulture agent Sarah Stoltz, co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Huttinger, and from Boone County Cooperative Extension horticulture extension agent David Kester. You can call the program at 513-419-7100. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, or email us talk@wvxu.org. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Glad to have you all here. I think it's important to think, even though it's cold outside, things are still growing. Tell us, each one of you, what do you still have in your garden?
Kale and broccoli.
Broccoli still, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, good. David?
Brussels sprouts and broccoli. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have collards and cabbage at the Winton Terrace Community Garden. And at home, we have an Asian American hybrid persimmon called Nikita's Gift, and so we're still getting the persimmons off that tree.
Let's talk a little bit about all of that. It surprises me because we've had some frost. At least in my Fort Thomas neighborhood, I've seen some pretty hard frost. Does frost not bother these plants?
Well, we're protecting them in our garden with either some plastic. Or, you know, just some making sure that they're planted correctly so they're avoiding any type of frost injury. But, yeah, we use plastic.
I've seen some damage on them, but really it is not – for those crops, it hasn't been a killing frost. And, you know, you talk to people who grow a lot of the fall vegetables, and they always say that the flavor improves after a frost. So,
really?
Yeah.
In what way?
More sugar and kale especially is one you always hear people say, oh, it's so much better after it's been hit by a little bit of frost.
Yeah, we have our brassicas under spun fiber row cover. It's a white spun polyester fabric.
Oh, okay.
And you can use it as what's called a low tunnel. So you put some wire braces and you drape that over the top of it. You can do the same thing like a low tunnel with plastic. And so we're just sort of trying to extend the season there a little bit longer. But another thing we have growing a lot, and which is you can do for over winter, is we have cover crops. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of different cover crops in our different gardens, like at the East End.
What's a cover crop?
A cover crop is a crop that you plant. You can be anywhere from, you know, mid-August to late September or even October. And what that does is it grows to a certain degree and protects and covers the soil, but also over the course of the winter, it either dies back or grows, and in the spring, it's turned into the soil to replace soil nutrients. So we use winter rye as one. It's a grass that we use, and it's different than an annual rye. Winter rye is like what are called a cereal grain, and so it won't just come back through its root system. But you turn that in, and it covers the soil to prevent erosion. It also prevents the germination of weeds through its own root system. And then you turn that into the soil, and, you know, when the soil dries up in mid-May, then you can plant into it. We also do vetch, hairy vetch, and what's called a cocktail mix, which is a combination of grasses, legumes, and herbaceous plants. And that's a winter kale crop, which you plant that and allow it grow up, and during the winter it actually dies back into a mat, and you can plant directly into that, or else you can turn it into the soil. And there's some fun things in there, too. There's Austrian pea, and there's daikon radishes. And daikon is the Asian-style radish. It can get up to 16 inches long, depending on your soil.
That's a lot of radish.
Yeah, and you can sneak in there during the winter and pull a couple of those, and so you have something to eat. And then also I've gone out and brushed snow off the top of these crops and harvested pea shoots off the Austrian pea cowpea and used those for salads. So the cover crops can sometimes also be a small edible crop for you during the winter.
Marian, there's a lot of experts that just recommend that you never let your soil be bare, that you keep something on it at all times. So a lot of us, you know, at the end of the growing season, we may clean up the dead plants, but part of that should also be then putting a grass or putting a as Peter said, a cover crop on there and protects it.
Grow through the winter.
They will survive during the winter, and they will grow at very low temperatures. And then, of course, in the spring, you're getting that root system and the top matter, and you're turning it in, and just a great organic matter. Protecting our soil is just critical.
Is it time to, is it okay to do that still now? You have time to plant it?
Well, it's too late now to plant
it's too late. So you would have had to have planted that already by this time.
But you can still put some type of green manure, if you will, on there, like maybe some grass clippings or mulched leaves or some other form of compost from that you're making. So, you know, always adding nutrition back into your soil. And then that, too, will continuously decompose, leaching out nutrients for your spring planting.
Yeah. You mentioned leaves, and that's something I think everybody has an abundance of right now. And you said mulched leaves. So if you're going to put leaves in, you shouldn't put them in whole. You should chop them up somehow. And how do you do that?
Well, you know, folks who have access to a lawnmower, you know, if you can bag your leaves up and then collect them and then nicely put them into your garden bed is preferred, because then that reduces their surface area and they decompose quicker than whole leaves. And also I find whole leaves blow away easier, whereas they're decomposed, they kind of, once they get wet, they kind of just glue themselves together, if you will, and they mat into the garden a little better.
Let's talk a little bit more about leaves and other uses, perhaps, for them. I know that you talked about keeping some things on the crops, the tunnels and plastic and things, to keep them from getting frost. Do leaves work in that regard, too, or is that not a good idea?
Well, you can, in your garden beds at home, you can use leaves definitely into it. I mean, at home, we have larger properties, and we're not after a really high degree of finish to our things, so we will just rake a lot of the whole leaves just right into, you know, some of our planting beds and let them break down during the winter. One of the things is, if you're trying to prevent some weed germination, is that the larger leaves act like shingles on a roof. They layer, and so they'll actually create a mat that'll help prevent germination of weeds in the spring. And if you've got perennial shrubs or, you know, peonies or different things that are coming up, that's pretty effective. And the vegetable garden, like Sarah said, the chop them up is probably a better use. I mean, again, at the Turner Farms garden at Winton Terrace, we had a couple beds that we were preparing for potatoes next year. And, you know, I took a lawnmower there with a bagged them up and just chopped them up as fine as I could. And then we dumped them in. And I took the garden bed and actually took a shovel and sort of clotted or opened up the soil periodically, so that when we brush the leaves over the top, some of them would go down into the soil, and then they'll do expansion and contraction through freezing and thawing out during the winter. It'll actually kind of almost turn the bed for you. And then also it keeps, you know, you open the soil, you don't actually turn the soil and reverse it. So the different levels of microorganisms and animals and insects and stuff that are living in the soil, fungi, you know, disrupt their habitat too much.
Well, what's the difference between opening? How do you open versus turn it?
Well, we just take a spade in there and just kind of rock it back and forth, and you may like pry it up a little bit, but without completely turning the clot over, you just pull the shovel out. Some people, I mean, there's actually spading plows that kind of chop in forks.
So rototillers are not the way to do it? I mean, I remember my mom had a garden. My dad would always rent the rototiller, and every spring, rototiller.
I always, you know, when I was younger, I just always wanted a rototiller, and I thought that was going to be the greatest thing. And now that I have one, I rarely use it anymore, because I can just turn it with raised beds or in beds and just turn it with a fork, and it's a much healthier way. Your soil, you're not disrupting all the organisms in there, and it's just better for the soil.
And every time you disturb that soil, you're bringing up closer to the soil surface a warmer temperature for those weed seeds to germinate. So, and also if we rototill time after time again, it starts to harden that pan underneath. So if you're only tilling 6 inches below that, it will continuously get harder and harder and harder. And then what we call a water table, or that water bowl that, you know, with our clay soils, we already have an issue with, you know, drainage. And so that's just going to further complicate that environment. So, you know, you may have to till every so often, but maybe you need to integrate other practices and reduce those heavy equipments on your soil.
Yeah, and there's different strategies to tilling, too, is that often if we go into an area and we're trying to rebuild soil that's, you know, clean construction fill or has just been fallow for years and years, sometimes we'll go in and do a deepest tilling we can once to just get air down into the soil, and then we use successions of cover crops, sheet mulching, and different cultivation things. And then actually, as you grow crops on these on these land. You know, at the end of the season, you know, the roots of the plants go down and they have these little feeder roots that go out many feet from the plant. And when you pull that plant out, there's still this network of roots, and that little network of roots decomposes, makes these little pathways for fungi and microorganisms to live. And so you have the whole biology of the soil taking place in there. So when I till now is that, you know, I may start off deep, but the idea is over the years is to till less. And when I do till is to till shallow. Because if you are like tilling in winter rye, I mean, that's a dense crop. It's mm-hmm. hard to do it by hand. So, but when I till it, what you want to do is just till down to just below the roots, which is shallow. So I'm not going into that deep soil and disrupting it, but I'm, working on the top soil. Yeah. Another thing is the daikon radish I mentioned is called tillage radish also. And you grow those and those deep roots go down. And during the winter, the plant, the radish dies and then the root decomposes and it has pierced the soil. And then the decomposed plant is kind of a compost that then feeds the soil. So it aerates and fertilizes. It's really a cool plant to use.
The stuff you're talking about now, though, are there any plants that are in the gardens right now that if you want to keep them going, you could actually bring them inside?
Herbs and maybe if you're coleus and well, sedum, of course, but that'll overwinter. But anything that geraniums. I mean, there's an awful lot of people that'll bring their geraniums in, and if they've got a sunny window, they'll survive. Things like that.
Are there any of the other vegetables you were talking about, the radishes or the carrots or anything that are perennials, or those things you plant every year?
Those are things that you plant every yeah. year, and you could get multiple seasons out of them if your time is correct. But for right now, those annual edible crops are meant to be for outside, mm-hmm. except for the herbs.
Yeah, there's a parsnip and there's some carrots that you can plant in late summer and they'll overwinter. And they say, I haven't done it, but they say that when you go to harvest those in the spring, they're just unbelievably sweet and just so good that after they've spent the winter out in the garden in that soil, you can go out and dig them up and they're just great.
Yeah, and Melinda at Turner Farm, I can't remember if it was in December or January. January, I think it is, will sow carrots and then kind of mulch it and then prepare those to come up in the spring. And it's just like Dave said, you get that early crop before the heat comes on and they're much sweeter. And that also
really
goes towards the idea of like letting things go into the fall. Mm-hmm. It really increases the sugar content and the flavor.
I want to remind you our phone number if you have a question or a comment is 513-419-7100. We usually get a lot of those, so get in early if you have one of those today. We're going to continue our discussion about your lawn and garden and plants in just a moment. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter, and you can email us talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Mark Haney. We're talking gardens, yards, and plants today with Campbell County Extension Office horticulture agent Sarah Stoltz, co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Huttinger, and from Boone County Cooperative Extension horticulture extension agent David Kester. You can join the discussion at 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And as we're talking about all of the different things you can bring in, we did get a question from Kimberly via email. She asks, how can she grow oregano this time of year, and does she need to start it from seed?
If you have it out, you can certainly pot it up and bring it in and put it in a sunny window. It's obviously a full sun plant, so you're going to have to get it in and just expect that it won't do as well inside as it has outside. But you can certainly bring those in and pot them up. And
could she start it from seed also?
She probably could. I think she'll have better luck if she takes an existing plant and brings it in. Seedlings inside tend to be somewhat weak unless they're growing in a really good sunny environment.
Yeah, I would. If she wants to start from seed, I would do that in early spring, late winter, like you would with other plants. And then otherwise, it'll just get long and stringy. But also, if you've have an established oregano plant in your garden, you don't have to dig up the whole thing. You can dig up a portion of it and pot it and bring it into the house and put it in a windowsill in your kitchen or a warm room. You know, you could probably keep it going over into the spring, and then you'd have your other plant that should come back.
Oh, so those are perennials. Those herbs will come
back. Well, it's a, you can, you want to mulch it really well. You know, I've had oregano for 10 years, and then 1 year just the wrong winter comes along, or not the wrong winter, a very cold winter, it'll kill it off. But it's, what do they call that, a soft perennial? Or
mm-hmm. That's what I'm kind of working on with my rosemary.
Right, that's you know, one struggle.
Yeah, and so I'm going to test this year and keep it out in the garden. It's the barbecue, longer stemmed varieties that you can make shish kebabs with, and that's supposed to be a little bit more cold hardy here. But, you know, it's a little protected. I have a lavender plant around it, and it's in a corner, so it's not going to get as much winter wind. And leaves are a very good way to mulch it in and protect it a little bit more. So I'm going to kind of do my own little experiment there. I could lift that up, pot it up, put it in a nice window where it receives some light, but, you know, I'm going to test it.
Yeah. And with the rosemary too, you know, if you the south, you know, up against the building, south facing will really help. Mm-hmm. It's like the same thing.
So
they recommend that for figs. Yeah,
it
gives you something. But the barbecue, like I said, that's the one I've had the best luck with in terms of longevity. And also for harvesting, because it has the long stems, you cut off the long stems and you let them dry, and then you can just take your finger over and hold it over a bowl, and the little leaves scrape right off. So there's a number of
I've never heard of that one. I'm going to have to look for
very
that.
Very delicious. You can
it's full
use
flavor.
It for Thanksgiving dinner this weekend.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. Scott is calling from Anderson. Hi, Scott. What's your question?
Hi. I'm enjoying the show. Thank you very much. I have a related question, I guess, about basil. I grow it every year. I love it. And I let some of it go to seed. I've had mixed results using those seeds. Sometimes they grow, sometimes they don't. And sometimes I let them get really brown and such, the flowers. And I'd like to kind of try to grow it over the winter this year. So I do have some seeds that I've trimmed off. What are your suggestions?
Well, basil is very cold sensitive. So, you know, in the garden, it's pretty much donezo for this time of year. But if you already have the seed, similar to what we were talking about earlier, I've never started basil by seed, but you want to wait till later on. And if you could have more sunlight, like late February, early March, starting those plants from seed. If you were to lift the plants a little early, similar to the other herbs we were speaking of earlier, you could probably, you would be able to keep that an indoor plant and treat it like a perennial, and then you could transplant it again then next year after the danger of frost. But they are very tender plants, so.
Yeah, but there are, you know, you can buy these little window boxes.
Go ahead, Scott. Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Scott.
No, I was going to say, if I plant some seeds now and keep them in a sunny window, will they come up?
I think that you could may get some germination, some small plants out of it. And I guess, you know, if you almost thought of it as a microgreen, that might kind of work. But there are little grow stations you can get for herbs that have a little artificial light, you know, like a little fluorescent bulb in it. And then you get at the light, you know, because that's one of the things, too, is that not only is it the temperature during the winter, but it's also the days are shorter. So, you know, you're getting a lot less sunlight. So if you really want to do these plants over winter, you need to provide them with artificial light. But the other thing to do is to kind of think seasonally. You know, it's like kind of the whole local food movement is that, like, accept the pattern, you know, the patterns of nature, the cycles of nature, and work with it. So, you know, grow your herbs during while there is sun and warmth, and then dry them. Or in terms of basil, you can make, you can process it with oil in a blender. And some people will spread it out in a plastic bag and a thin sheet so that, and then freeze it. And then you can break off little pieces. I know other people freeze it in a ice cube tray and then put those little ice cube.
Just with some oil? Is that what you said?
Water.
Just
water.
A little bit of water. And then you pop them out of the ice tray and put them in a freezer bag and just smush all the air out you can, and then seal it and just take out one little cube at a time. you know, drying oregano and these mm-hmm. other things too. But there are, you can, on the, if you go on, you know, it's a whole thing on the internet or your local store, you can buy these little window box things for growing herbs, but it's never going to be the same. And
it's
plus that you're using artificial fertilizer, potting soil, it's never going to have the robust life at force and energy in the plant that you would if it was grown outdoors near its proper season.
Scott, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. I have one other question about basil, and I tried it again this year, and I tried to prune it right away, but I still got this tall, skinny plant. And no matter what, and I see these big, huge, beautiful potted plants of basil that are so wide, and what am I doing wrong?
Maybe is it like yellow and discolored a little bit?
Not necessarily, no.
Maybe the sunlight exposure, because a lot of times when plants are like a little leggy, they're like reaching for the sun, you know. Maybe
this one is a very hot, hot sun. Maybe it's just too hot. I don't know. But I can never seem to get that basil. I guess it's not the right time of year to talk about that because I've had to give it up.
Buy more plants and just harvest
more. Put more together in
exactly.
there. Yeah. All right, more in the pot.
But you can also, there are different varieties. Mm-hmm. You know, you can try a couple different varieties, you know, because it could just be, you know, maybe the plant you bought that one year, its growth nature of that plant is to grow tall and stringy, and other ones are more compact.
And maybe we just need to take into consideration that my thumb is not green.
Well, don't give up.
513-419-7100 is our phone number. Ben's calling from Clifton. Hi, Ben. What's your question?
More a comment. Carrots in the ground over winter. They're wonderful. They're ugly as hell when you dig them in the spring because there's been some root maggots and other things have played with them. But you serve these chunks of these sweet carrots, and people can't believe it because they're used to, we will not name the store, but they're used to store-bought carrots.
And these are better.
There are some varieties which, if you read your seed catalogs, they'll say overwinter. And we have mild winters.
Are they difficult to harvest for you in the winter when the ground gets cold and hard?
If the ground's frozen, it's too early to harvest them. I don't harvest them until March.
Oh, okay.
February, March. Okay. And they pull right up.
And when do you plant them?
Whenever the ground's hot in the summer.
Okay. And then they just take all winter to grow. All right.
Yeah. And the other comment is on using leaves to cover the garden. I have become known as the furtive leaf snatcher in Clifton. On garbage night, my wife and I go around, and we know who has what kinds of trees, who mulches their leaves before they put them in brown bags, and we will take some years it's up to 20 or 30 bags of leaves off of the curb, and rarely have we found anything untoward in them. And
I have a house in Fort Thomas with some leaves. No, I'm just kidding.
Ben, they're looking for you. They are aware of your habits.
It's worse than that, Dave. I ran into one other furtive leaf snatcher at Howell and Whitfield. She had her station wagon. We had ours. The house has maybe 20 bags of oak leaves, nice acidic stuff for limestone soil. And we agreed. She would take north of Ludlow, and I would take south.
As long as you can work that out.
You know, I did that when my kids were like teenagers, and they're not real big fans of you stopping in front of houses and getting out and throwing garbage. It looks like garbage in your vehicle.
Well, it's really nice, you know, along those lines. I know David Kester does this with our garden in Campbell County, but, you know, people bag up with their either debris, their annual debris, their leaves in black, you know, heavy-duty bags. Well, perhaps you don't have the garden right now to put those right in, but guess what? Black really traps in that heat. So then by spring, when you need to add a little bit more side dress compost to your garden, it's already pretty much composted for you. So, you know, if you can collect some, you'd be a little leaf snatcher in the neighborhood. You know, again, don't think you have to use it all right now because it will decompose fairly quickly, and then you could just add that right in your garden next year.
And it's the last thing, lots of nice, fresh, dry straw on top of the garlic, Dave.
Yes, I agree.
Thanks so much for your call, Ben. We appreciate it. Our phone number is 513-419-7100.
You know, garlic, we haven't mentioned that, actually, because that's interesting. It's a little late now probably to plant it. I mean, we had a few stray bulbs we put, my wife put in a couple of days ago. But, I mean, that's something you plant in the fall, and you'll get some shoots coming up, and then, you, like you said, mulch it really heavily with straw, and then it dies back over to, well, the green part dies back, and then the plant regenerates growth in the early spring, and then you harvest it late June, mid-July, depending on the variety.
And you can still put that in now?
No, not now. But, I mean, it's a late fall kind of thing that you could.
Ben is actually who got me started in growing garlic, and he lives right across from UC, and he's one of the first people I've seen that has effectively integrated the front part of his yard into his garden. Yeah. And he and his wife have really done a neat job out there.
And they also grow a lot of those, the walking onions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just
yes,
dawned on me now who Ben is.
Yes.
Walking onions? What's a walking onion?
What are they also called, Mildred onions or something? I've never done them. I've just seen
top-setting onions, yeah. They also call them, too.
Yeah, you plant them 1 year and then you harvest them the second year. And,
yeah.
Yeah, there's like a...
And it's the edible portion forms on the top.
We have a question from Alex who wants to start a garden in the backyard and all the neighbors have a lawn service. How can he block chemicals from entering his yard?
Mm. Well, if you have a relationship with your neighbor, I would ask what type of chemicals that they use, because depending upon what they have, it be organic or synthetic chemical, there's a residual or possible leaching that a particular chemical has. So, like if it's an herbicide, for example, typically it's not leaching, it's just staying right there in the plant. But nitrogen, for example, it can move through the soil. So, raised beds to prevent direct contact with any root system zone. Any other thoughts or suggestions?
You know, the fertility or the fertilizer is one of the issues, but obviously the herbicides and the weed killers are something, and a lot of those are pretty volatile in and warm temperatures, and you put them on and they'll get in the air and they can drift, and that's really an issue, and it's unfortunate that happens, but obviously the further that you can locate your garden away from the barrier or the borderline, the better off you are.
Yeah, and Turner Farms is a certified organic farm, and so our community gardens aren't certified, but we're great advocates on organic, or what I actually like to refer to as biological gardening. But I think it also could be an opportunity for you to have a conversation with your neighbors about are there other alternatives? I mean, you don't want to become confrontational, obviously, or criticize them for what they're doing, but, to ask them to look into things. Because there's a lot of effects. I mean, like, there's a lot of concerns about even household pets, cats and dogs and the little bare feet running around.
Bees? My husband's looking to maybe consider bees, and if you have people in the neighborhood that treat the lawn, is that going to harm the bees?
It can.
Depending upon what they spray, when they spray, I mean, our bees really like dandelions and clover. Oh, my goodness, they love clover. So... stereotypically, homeowners try to, spray for those plants, actually edible plants. And if they're in bloom and, our little pollinators are out there on those flowers trying to get there, that's going to have a negative effect on those pollinators and our bumblebees. So.
Jim's calling from Indiana. Hi, Jim. What's your question?
Hi. Well, you guys were talking about being able to freeze some different stuff. Is it possible to freeze cilantro?
That's an interesting...
I've never tried it.
That's more of a chef question, maybe.
Yeah. As I always say, horticulture is a science. Mm-hmm. Doesn't hurt to try. So...
Yeah.
Would you put that with water in an ice cube tray, the way you're talking about some of these other things, or...?
It would be interesting. I just don't know the answer to that. I mean, people dehydrate it.
Yeah.
Cilantro is such it's a fast crop.
Yeah.
It goes from seed to – and one of the things – I have always grown it, but this past year I didn't. And I began to go to the grocery store, and you can find some really fresh cilantro. And I was buying two big bunches for 99 cents, which was – a lot more than I could have used, and it seems to be available all year round. So, I guess the question is some of this really worth growing as opposed to, you know, and to me, the cilantro had just as much flavor as what I was growing and getting in the summer as it did when I was buying from a store.
Jim, I think they're telling you to plant some winter carrots.
Yeah. Well, but you
and
know,
just try it. I mean, it's not going to hurt. It may turn a little brown. But I don't know if that's going to really have a negative effect on the flavor.
Yeah. I mean, if you could try, let's say, again, like we were talking about with the basil, you could try growing it in one of these kind of windowsill kind of situations and eating it while it's small. I mean, it's just a question whether it's cost effective. But if you saved your own seed from your plants the year before, then, well, you could use the seeds for culinary reasons, but then also you could plant it and see how can it work as a kind of a microgreen crop. I don't know.
Right. Jim, why don't you try and give us a call back?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks so much. Yeah. All right. Thanks for calling. Again, our number is 513-419-7100. We got an email from Peter in Over the Rhine who says he has standard hibiscus and rose plants in the pots he bought them in. What's the best way to get them through the winter?
Definitely, the hibiscus I'm a little worried about. I don't think that's, if it's a greenhouse one, I don't think that's going to overwinter outside no matter what you do. So that one may be a one to bring in. Now, the roses, certainly, you can sink the entire pot if you want to keep them in pots, but bury that pot, dig it into the ground, mulch it, and put some straw around it. Or, you know, simply get it in the ground. If they should be, I'm assuming these are hardy roses that didn't come from out of a greenhouse operation, so they should overwinter without any problem if you protect them.
Yeah, and I think the trick is I mean, if he's in Over the Rhine, I'm wondering, you know, is he living in an apartment? He has it on a windowsill or a roof or something like that. It might be a problem. But there are a number of community gardens in Over the Rhine. You know, maybe one of those gardens would let you heel it in just their compost pile or something for the winter, and then you can come pick it back up in the spring.
You can't bring it in the house for the winter. That would not do well.
I don't think on those. Well, the hibiscus might if it was. Well, but the roses,
sometimes there's little miniature roses that you can find, you know, at some of the florists that you buy as a gift, you know. People, you know, actually at the office, they have those, and I just tell them to treat it, put it in a direct a window with direct sunlight and treat it as a house plant, but it doesn't produce as beautiful as you may think of when you first got it.
You know, a lot of those things, such as citrus plants, what you're trying to do and what our goal is just to get them through the winter. And when you return them to the outdoors in the spring, they will flourish. They love that humidity. They love the heat, and they'll come right back. But a lot of times, you know, when you bring them inside, they are going to deteriorate. And if they get too bad, the best thing to do is throw them away.
Start over.
Yeah.
We're talking gardening today. You can call us at 513-419-7100 or email us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Mark Haney. We're talking gardening today with Campbell County Extension Office horticulture agent Sarah Stoltz, co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Hunninger, and from Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester. You can join the discussion at 513-419-7100 or email us, talk@wvxu.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. And in case anyone's listened closely and wonders why I'm saying Boone County and David Kester's name, you're there 3 days now?
This is my third day.
he retired from Campbell County and is now back working for Boone County. So we're glad to have you available to join us again. Again, our phone number is 513-419-7100. Dan's calling from Mount Airy. Hi, Dan. What's your question?
Hi. How are you?
Just fine. What's your question?
I have a backyard. It's about half an acre, and it's sort of split level. A long, long time ago, it was part of a farm, and I have a little hill that goes down into the top of a wall, and it's a nightmare to cut. And it gets full sun, and it's, you know, it's lawn. And I'd like to know what I could put down as a ground cover that I wouldn't have to mow.
That is a tough problem. There are ground covers, and establishing them, one of the ones that comes to mind is ivy, but you have to be very careful when you go to establish it, because you really need to delicately kill the sod or the grass that's growing there and then plant into it. What we don't want you to do is to try to till that up and leave it in a really erodible state, so that, you know, if in the interim you get a lot of rain, all that soil is going to be down at the bottom. This is one of those situations where somehow you can put a tarp over that area, kill the grass below, or of course you can use Roundup, which would kill the grass out, but leave the sod, you know, the dead sod there, and you can try to plant through that and then mulch in between the ground cover plants, be it ivy comes to mind.
Low-growth sumac is one of my favorites. Contoniaster can, spread fairly quickly. Some junipers, there are some really pretty junipers, which is an evergreen. And then there is is that St. John's wort?
St. John's wort.
That is, in my opinion, fairly fabulous. And it also blooms in the summer. So, you know, there are options, but it's going to take time, and perhaps, you know, you're going to have to integrate, you know, a diverse plant, I would recommend. But availability, you're going to have a good shot late fall or in the fall or spring.
Well, another thing I found, in just terms of like trying to get rid of the sod and avoiding the use of chemicals. One thing I have done is, you know, the solarization, you put down plastic, and you really need to do that in June, July, mm-hmm. or July, August is the best time, and leave it there for about 4 to 6 weeks, and you'll see the grass is just dead. But grass is also makes a great, breaks down and makes great compost mm-hmm. or soil builder too, so after you kill it. Then what we've gone in to done some tests in terms of doing different types of crops, so we take straw bales. And if you can split, they're called taking a leaf of a straw bale. If you kind of take it, you can split it, and you make these kind of like squares, and you lay them down like a checkerboard over the dead grass. And then where there's sort of like the grid intersects, you could, dig down in there and plant something right in there. So that might be a way. I've never done that, trying to establish a ground cover, but we have done that, for first crops in community gardens to do things like bush beans and even kale and different brassicas we've done like that.
You can even maybe think about if you want to do something edible, because there are strawberries, for example, that could, take over that area fairly quickly, and you can harvest from that.
That is a really tough question, and it's one that I've had mm-hmm. over and over again. I've recommended to people, and sometimes they've come back and they've told me, "Boy, I wish I just left the grass there." even mowing it just a couple times a year is sometimes better than after you kill it and you leave it open to erosion. It's, a lot of times you're lucky to have grass there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and you also might want to just look into the concept of a meadow. Mm-hmm. And there's like Wild Ones, a number of different organizations that, offer classes and training and information on that. And there's some good examples of those in the zoo and botanical gardens here in Cincinnati.
Absolutely.
Dan, thanks so much for your call and good luck. We appreciate
thanks
it. Again, our number 513-419-7100. Mary's calling from Goshen. Hi, Mary. What's your question?
Hi. I have a mini farm. I grow a few little vegetables of my own on it, but mostly the property's for horses. And I wondered, I pay a waste hauler to take horse manure away every 2 weeks to the landfill. Are there any services that can collect that and use it for gardeners?
Whereabouts are you located?
Really? Wait a minute, Peter. That's mine.
It's the mini farms in Goshen. I actually, my next door neighbor actually has his little garden. I turn around uh-huh. and I fill up his little garden cart. It's a lot easier to fill that than fill my dumpster from a lifting perspective. But it's generated all year round. And when I clean stalls, it would have chopped straw or wood shavings mm-hmm. in it. But I also collect it because I clean my arenas up and stuff. Where it's just plain manure. Is there such a thing as a person that comes around or has their own dumpsters that does it?
We might have to start a business.
Yeah. Well, there are, for instance, at Turner Farms Community Garden Program, Josh and my coworker, there's a stable that's associated with Diamond Oaks High School where we've gone out and got some manure and some other locations too. Then what we do is it's fairly green, so we take it and do compost windrows and like let it sit for 6 months to a year before we use it. I'm assuming if you're growing vegetables, you're probably doing some composting of it for your own personal use. What I would do is if there's community gardens in your neighborhood or near you or another small farm, is to let those people know. And, you know, they may be willing to, you know, come get it. I don't know if you have a bobcat or a front-end loader that you can put it into trucks or not. I mean, that's always an advantage. But if you network with the, you know, local community gardeners or if there's local garden clubs, you probably would find people who would be willing to come out a couple times a year and pick it up.
Well, there's an awful lot of people out there who will pay for that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would call the Civic Garden Center, too. I think they might want to have your name, and they could refer some people to you. And garden centers even would, you know, probably would be able to pass your name along to clientele.
Mary, maybe you can turn it into a money-making rather than spending money business.
And it is an expense. I think we'll always have a waste hauler just for feed sacks and everything else, but most of what we're discarding is basically manure or manure embedding out of the stalls. And is it possible to compost and use something that has chopped straw or wood shavings entrained in it?
Well, it's good because like the straw in particular is carbon and the manure is nitrogen. Mm-hmm. So you need, I mean, ideally, what is it, like one part nitrogen to 30 parts carbon is the ideal mix for compost, which almost nobody can, it's really hard to do for the homeowner. Mm-hmm. So I would take that manure and if you have leaves, mix that into it too and make a windrow and let it sit for a year.
If you can compost that on site and get it hot enough, mm-hmm. you should have people beating down your door.
Mm-hmm. I'll see what I can do. We don't have a bobcat or a backhoe or anything.
Well, how many horses do you have? You just have one or two horses?
On site right now I've got four. And I've got a rescue coming in from Oklahoma, so that'll be five.
So you have a fairly good amount then. Okay. I was just curious about the volume.
Yeah, it's a four-yard dumpster, and we dump that weekly in the winter, the hauler. And they do a great job, you know, no knock there. But it just seems like, you know, we'd still keep them around, but it seems like it's just sort of a waste to just throw it away if somebody can use it.
Mary, thanks so much for your call. I hope you figure out a way to get it used. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. 513-419-7100 is our phone number. Nazrin from St. Bernard wants to know if there is something to break down leaves into compost. Time? What's the answer?
Well, a little nitrogen. Nitrogen, grass clippings, anything green is your nitrogen. So
mixing some existing compost with those leaves and then anything that the smaller going into the compost pile, the quicker it's going to rot. So if you can shred them somehow, run over them with a lawnmower, but the smaller the twigs and the leaves and the stems are, the quicker they'll break down. But, boy, if you can blend them with a little bit of existing compost or some, you know, manure or things like that, it will really speed up the process.
Yeah, and at the Turner Farm Community Garden in Winton Terrace, there's one of the gardeners there, Ricky, really loves to turn compost. And I've always been fairly passive about it, but he's been turning it every 2 to 3 weeks. And I was shocked at how accelerated the decomposition was. But also, you talked about inoculating your compost with existing with finished compost makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And that's also a good time to use animal manure. I mean, no dog or cat or human, but to use, horse or cow, goat, rabbit is a good one. If you know someone with a rabbit or a guinea pig even, to add that in, that'll kind of help inoculate and speed up the decomposition mm-hmm. process.
Nancy's calling from Delhi. Hi, Nancy. What's your question?
My question is, I have a lot of indoor tropical plants that I put out in the summer, and they do get huge. And when I bring them in, I try to clean them, and I was wondering if there's a good insecticide to use that would get rid of any infestations or mites or anything before I bring them in the house.
I like to give my plants a good shower before, you know, well, prune, really prune those flowers off. Then I give them a shower. And then really you want to try to avoid any type of, you know, herbicide inside your home in an enclosed environment. But should you need like an insecticide, I would just, again, after even maybe taking that plant into the bathtub and really putting it in your shower. But I sometimes have troubles with my succulents with spider mites. So I will towel them off, or I just go to the insecticidal soap. But I caution you using that on certain plants. I know succulents, for example, they can become like they get burnt. So just I caution you on that, even though it is an organic product. But, you know, water goes a long way, and you have to water them anyhow. So in a towel, I just, you know, literally massaged the leaves.
Nancy, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Take care. I do want to say you should be able to stay away from any petrochemical-based herbicides and pesticides in the situation. I think using the safer soaps, even if you use a biodegradable dish soap and mix it with water and do a very simple spray, will kind of really alleviate most of those problems. And think about it. You don't want to be spraying poisons in your house. And then you have your pets or if you have children or grandchildren in your house.
Or yourself.
Or yourself, you know, going over there and, you know.
And then that heat.
Nibbling
from
on
the,
something.
You know, your heat source. You know, it's definitely not a good idea.
Time for one more quick call from Jeff and Anderson. Hi, Jeff. What's your question?
Just wondering, I just kind of listening to your program today, kind of figured out that I've been tilling my soil too much because my last 2 years of crops have been kind of weak. I've also got a very big crop of pine needles this year. Would it be okay to use the pine needles for a winter, you know, for just a cover for the winter and putting some nutrients back into the soil?
They're great. Definitely. And not only are they really good for your soil, I mean, they're somewhat acidic, but the most of our soils around here are somewhat basic, so that should only help. And those are just such a wonderful mulch around any of your landscape plants. And I assume it's probably white pine, but those are great to incorporate.
And they decompose fairly quickly, so good to go.
Yeah, and also if they're around your existing white pine tree, I mean, they fall there for a reason. Remember, that's like a natural forming mulch there, and so I don't recommend going in and removing all of them from underneath the tree.
Jeff,
no,
good luck.
I wouldn't do that. Yeah. I wouldn't do that just because I've just noticed that this year it just seems to be a really heavy fall this year for the pine needles. And I've got one more quick question for you about bamboo. I made the mistake of planting some bamboo, and it's overtaking my yard. Anyway, getting rid
what does
of
he do? What does he do?
It's just bamboo.
We're almost out of time. Let me let him answer.
I don't think bamboo is as invasive as the reputation it's got. If you continue to mow around it, you're going to break off, and it's going to stay, you know, fairly intact. But you know, barriers, I like bamboo, and I'm one of the few
people. I love it. I like it, too.
Yeah.
I've tried putting barriers with railroad ties, but
okay.
They just either go underneath it or over top of it.
They will go underneath it. You know, they do sell that if you can trench, but you have to go pretty deep with it. But, you know, just if you can continue to mow around it, it should stay. If you cut the top part of a bamboo off continuously, it will not run as, you know, it will not get established outside that area.
Good luck. Thanks for calling, Jeff.
Thank you. Uh-huh.
Well, thank you all for being here. As always, more questions than time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We've been talking gardening today with Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoltz, co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Hunninger, and from Boone County Cooperative Extension, Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Assistant producer is Belinda Kai. Today's technical director was Dave Shermer. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Mark Haney.
The United States and Israel have enjoyed a strong bond for decades, but recent turmoil in the Middle East and a new administration in Washington could alter that alliance. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll discuss the future of U.S. relations with Israel. We'll also hear how to control your holiday spending. And in Focus on Technology, how an iPad in the dugout could change baseball. That's Cincinnati Edition, Monday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.